So, let's talk about the Who's for a minute longer. That they're a good model for the good that comes from being in a community. And I have to say, my thoughts are not totally original about this. I heard a comment about the Who's at another sermon in another UU church at Christmas last year at the UU church in Falston, Maryland, where we went for Christmas service. Reverend Lynn Cox happened to mention that the Who's seem to have gone through a lot. I agree. They have. Because, I mean, it's never stated explicitly in either of the stories that feature the Who's. The Grinch story features the Who, but also Horton Hears a Who features the Who's. But living on a speck of dust on top of a dandelion can't be all that easy on a pup. And yeah, like, Horton is your friend, but sometimes he can't help you or even hear you. And then, on top of the uncertainty about your world and all those earthquakes and stuff, there's the whole experience with the Grinch, which I just read. Speaking of which, have you noticed how the Grinch is a cross between a hermit and a real bad materialist? We don't know for sure, because Dr. Seuss doesn't tell us why he's so angry and what it is that made his heart two sizes too small. Maybe it was a health problem. Maybe his parents were mean to him. Maybe it was societal. But we do see, especially towards the end of the Grinch story, that he has been in some kind of psychological pain basically all his life. He still has a dog. That's kind of like nice for him. We also see that on the outside, like if you look at the picture of the Grinch in the picture, he is a Who, just like all the other Who's. He looks like a Who. He's like one of them. But maybe he's just a renegade Who. Even he, however, eventually finds that the values of community are good for him, for his heart and his health. And when he was outside of the community, he was in pain. But then when he's embraced, like it's like a prodigal son story, he gets to carve the roast beast. So we learn, as Tori said, that when sad times befall us, being together, having each other is the one thing that makes sense. Individualism is the perceived main characteristic of Americans. Even looking at our own UU tradition, Thoreau, Whitman, whom I just read a moment ago, and even to a certain extent Emerson, but not completely, all have individualism in their good character trait. Individualism is what gave America the pioneers, the westward expansion, entrepreneurship, discoveries, all kinds of good things. But more recently, it has been taken to extremes and has given us the death of labor unions. Essentially, riding in cars instead of using public transportation, living in suburbia, the iPod, the internet, and many other forms of human isolation. As Americans, and I count myself as American, at this point in history, we exist safely cocooned in our little pods or huge but isolated mansions, and we've come to believe that this is our natural state, that we don't really need to feel connected to other humans to feel good. It is no mystery why we remain dissatisfied with our lives, wanting more and doing less and growing further apart from one another. But it hasn't always been like this. And things were, you know, ironically better in the past when things were worse economically. And I get the story from Ed, my husband, from my in-law side of the family. My father-in-law was born on October 2nd, 1929, 27 days before the Wall Street crash, in Michigan, in a middle-class family. And pretty soon after the crash, his mom and dad didn't have any money to feed the baby. And yet, somehow every morning, Ed's grandma would find in front of the door a bottle of milk for the baby, left there by some anonymous donor. This went on for a year. And whoever it was that was donating milk for the baby wasn't like a nonprofit organization or a philanthropist. It wasn't like Howard Buffett or something. The milk came from plain people from the community. Just people maybe just as badly off as they were, but they were aware that there was a baby. I'm not sure what changed, but I had this thought, and it's not even, I wrote it by hand today. I had this thought, but my father-in-law, every time he says goodbye to us when we go visit, he says, take care of each other, as a way of saying goodbye. He doesn't say goodbye, he just says, take care of each other. Communities helping each other now are kind of the exception. You see a story on TV when there is a thunder, a tornado, or Hurricane Sandy and stuff. I like to think of myself at least as partly immune from this isolationist trait, but I gotta tell you, it's not true, even though originally I'm from another country. And I'm gonna tell you an episode that I'm not really proud of, but in terms of explaining what that is, what happened to me, when communal sharing happened to me, I kind of reacted badly to it, and I didn't realize that I was in the middle of a spontaneous outbreak of goodness. In 2005 was the year Isabella was born. We lived in Italy, where there is universal health care. Yay. This means that the hospital and the doctors and the nurses and the accoutrements are free. However, when you go to give birth, you have to share the hospital room with three other people, at least three other people. I did not want to share. I was hoping for a private room, where to be by myself. But there was. I kind of had to share. That's the thing. Them's the breaks. The hospital staff was explaining that to me between contractions. And that if I wanted, you know, to share a room, it meant that, you know, my husband couldn't stay overnight because there's other women. So your mom, your sister, your female cousins, or other female friends can stay, but the men have to go. Or you can just be by yourself. So after delivering, when visiting hours were over, I had a gigantic hissy fit, where I was literally whining to please give me some like closet, broom closet someplace, because I did not want to share. I did not want to share. But eventually I had to accept the reality and settle in for the night. On top of that, the other thing that is different from here is that the newborn baby gets to stay with you, not in a room to let you rest. You just have the baby and three other babies. And so there we were, four new moms, attending female relatives, unable to sleep because we were all like full of adrenaline. The room was full of all these people, crying babies. It was hot because it's bad for the baby to be too cold. And I was in a bad mood, but suddenly in the middle of the night, we just started talking and we just started sharing information, where to get baby things, where who our OBGYNs were, and where to get good stuff. And then we shared some food, and then we passed around our babies to one another to share. In the middle of the night, a nurse joined in to talk about how to be a first-time mom. And then we all fell asleep. It's taken me a long time to understand what that was, because I really, every time I thought about it, I just couldn't wait to leave. I wanted my private room. I just wasn't seeing that for what it was. And Now when I remember that night, I realize that despite my inconvenience, that was community. That was a form of community. Because after all, you know, if everybody was feeling the same way that I was, and they weren't, and I was, we could have drawn the curtains and just isolated ourselves. There's always a chance to isolate yourself, even when you're in the middle of people. I was Googling around for information about sacred community, beloved community. I wasn't really sure what to talk about this time, and I needed some jumping point for this sermon. And I found a sermon by a layperson, I think, a parishioner of Wildflower Church. His name is Scotty McIntyre Johnson. And that sermon starts by quoting the theme song from the TV show Cheers, you know, like where everybody knows your name. He mentions Josiah Royce, too. Josiah Royce, for those of you who don't know, is a philosopher that created the term beloved community. The term beloved community is known in general because Dr. King used it a lot in his speeches. But the philosophical underpinnings of that, whereby Josiah Royce, who was a 19th century to early 20th century philosopher. Both of these things I wanted to do in this sermon. And then I found the sermon, and I thought, ugh. But anyway, I'm still going to use some of the stuff. Because Mr. McIntyre Johnson makes the point that much like hospitals and doctors are needed to practice medicine, churches are the beloved community and the locus, the only point where peaceful human connectedness can happen. And reflecting upon what he wrote, I can say that I both agree and disagree with some of his points, which, hey, good, because I can say something else. I agree with that point because churches, and especially UU churches, are primarily congregational, y'all here, right? And in the UU land, the true big deal is a shared sense of inclusiveness and community and of deeds, not creeds. This is the building block of our belief system, and it is a social building block. We nurture the spirit through social interaction, and I don't need to tell you because you're going to go to coffee hour, you've been to Camp Fest, some of you, you go to for Saturday lunch, so social activity is important. But then, I think that despite the efforts of our church to be inclusive and open and welcoming and all that, if we start saying that the beloved community exists only here, we are running the risk of putting boundaries to what, by Royce's own definition, is supposed to be universal. I will talk a little bit more about this in a little bit. But in other words, if we start the distinction, okay, beloved is this one, and then the other community is an inferior quality community over here, we end up being no different than any other gated community, another pod, maybe a bigger pod, a neighborhood watch with good intention, but just as isolating and exclusive. Which brings me to a point that I haven't made explicitly yet, but one that underscores this whole discussion. So I mentioned the theme song from Cheers, and for those of you, I mean, there's all people that probably you know the song, but when he says, sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. I was going to point out that, I mean, that's nice, but there's more to community than being in a place where everybody knows your name. The main thing is bigger than that. So let's look at the underpinnings of the concept of beloved community, and I hope I won't bore you. I'll make it quick. So Josiah Royce, in his philosophy, uses the term loyalty. when he's defining beloved community. When he defines the word loyalty, it's similar to agape, or love one another as brothers type of love, fraternal love. Roy says this love includes the whole world and is eternal. And the quote that really stood out to me in his writings is this: "The unity of the world is not an ocean in which we are lost, but a life which is and which needs all our lives in one. Our loyalty defines that unity for us as a living, active unity. We have come to the unity through the understanding of our loyalty. It is an eternal unity only insofar as it includes all time and change and life and deeds." Community does not mean loss of individual. It means the addition of agapic love to our lives through action, through deeds. Deeds are the cornerstone. With deeds, this idea of community is no longer abstract. It means that peace can exist in a community where loving deeds are intentional. This, to me, is way better than isolation. Speaking of isolation, in the last few weeks, I've been surprised to be doing things that required stretching a comfort zone I did not know needed stretching. Because I'm the kind of person who highly values their private time, which is another way to say that I like to be isolated. And I had the opinion that I needed quiet and alone time to think deep thoughts, to recharge and prepare adequately for whatever, for being out there. But right now, this looks a lot more like hiding and or looking the other way. I don't like it. But what happened was, every single time I get asked to do something for a group of people or with a group of people, at work, at church, in other areas of my life, and I end up saying yes, I immediately then think, what do these people see in me? What, if anything, am I bringing to the table? What if I suck at this? And then I get the overwhelming desire to just retreat to a corner instead of engaging, blend in with the wallpaper, read a book, run away screaming, take your pick. As I was thinking of what to talk about today, I think I had an epiphany. If you're asked to help in whatever capacity, and other people are seeing that you could be helpful, but you don't, isn't it selfish to deny to help? Isn't it like you are a little bit like the Grinch? Not a lot. I'm not saying. Okay. If your normal state is isolation, deeds are difficult to do. A lot of the times, if you can help, if one can help, one prefers giving money or signing a petition online and then sidestep the human interaction altogether. Just let me get this straight. I'm not saying don't pledge money to causes. Actually pledge money to causes here. I don't even mock online petitions. One of our friends works for change.org. I would never dare, you know? But what I'm saying is that just having the so-called skin in the game, the personal one-to-one interaction, is harder if you prefer staying isolated, obviously, because alone, it's easy to nurture self-doubt, to nurture illusions about what's going to go on. It's easier to look the other way. A community of inclusiveness and love makes you aware of what your contribution can be and brings you up. It raises you to be your best self. It is not easy, and sometimes it's not pretty, but it works. So I I want to close with some recommendations, I guess. I don't really want to call it the solution, because we all have to find our way around beloved community, and we're all unique, and we're all individuals, and that's a good thing. But since I'm in the pulpit, I'm going to be preachy. So take the church. Take this church, since you're here, as your field base. Cultivate and or experience beloved community in here, in this sacred space, which is special and safe and loving. Then get out there and bring it. Learn more about your family, your coworkers, before it's too late. Take an interest in your surrounding, befriend your neighbors, pets, and keep an open mind and an open heart. The unity of the world can be eternal, and you are loved.